Oh my God, was that a black cat that just walked past the studio? All right, doesn't matter. We had to do it anyway. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Thank you for clicking on, tuning in to episode 24, which means you can, I think the show is now binge-worthy, if that's a word. If you wanted to, in a day, you could start at the first one I did back in May, and for 24 straight hours, you could listen to nothing but Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. I may do that. I don't even think I've heard all these shows. I've done them. I've heard them in my head. But I don't have actually sat down, so maybe I'm going to do that soon. Just a binge weekend on myself. Ooh, that didn't sound... There's a word for that, isn't that? When you have fun with yourself? Well, that's why I'm here with you. I'm having fun with you.
I'm touching that one.
Hi-oh. That's what she said. That's why I'm by myself. Anywho... we are here at the WGN Studios for Captain Podtastic, and we've got a few different things to talk about today. Last episode, 23, I sort of rambled on my great trip to Krakow and Prague. But this week, I've got several little topics to talk about. And one, of course, is today is October 31st. Happy Halloween, everybody! Yeah, but you hear that music in the background. That is Mike Oldfield's Tubular Bells. And that was a song that was just out, released. And when they were putting together the Exorcist film, which was released back in 1973, William Friedkin, who is actually from Chicago, the director, heard this song and said, wow, that's going to be the theme of my music. And now, over 40 years ago, as soon as you just hear that first note, you think of the devil. You think of Linda Blair's head turning around. You think of the green pea soup. And now there's actually a show on Fox called The Exorcist, which I've been watching. It's okay. Interesting twist. Gina Davis is in it. She plays the mom. And interesting twist on it. And it's been announced. It's been on the show. I wasn't aware of it. I kind of guessed it just before she said it a couple of episodes ago. Interesting twist on the show, if you haven't watched it yet. Sorry, it's been on for a month and a half, so screw your spoiler alerts. I'm telling you the twist. The interesting twist is that Gina Davis, her daughter is possessed, and little did we know, Gina Davis is the Linda Blair character from the Exorcist movie, and now she is an older woman and has a daughter, and the devil has, taken her daughter over because ultimately he wants Reagan back. He wants the mother. And at one, she keeps saying, when she's possessed, we want her back, we want her back. And you're like, well, who's the she? And all of a sudden, Gina Davis breaks down and says, I'm Reagan. I changed my name. I went on TV. My mom tried to exploit me with, when this happened. And, I haven't spoken to my mother in 20 years, blah, blah, blah. So interesting twist on that. And I kind of guessed it. And then sure enough, she said it. But that music is just synonymous with that film and with scariness. So if you've listened to me with any kind of regularity over the last several years, you know, and this is not some, I don't got to go out of my way, but I just look at this from a very pragmatic viewpoint. I do not answer the door for trick-or-treaters. And I am not a Halloween version of Scrooge. I am not the Great Pumpkin. I don't answer the door, not because I don't like Halloween. What happened was, I used to answer the door. And then some teenagers would come to the house without even wearing a costume. And just, I opened the door and there they are with a bag. And I'm like, hey, how about something for the effort? You know, put some mascara on, a little blush, anything. Give me something. I'm giving you candy. The least you could do is put a mask on. But then think about it. You're opening your door to a complete stranger with a mask on November 1st, November 15th, October 15th. That's potentially a felony. Somebody with a mask is ringing your doorbell. Do you answer the door?
Well, when you put it like that.
Well, but this is my point. So why? I mean, if I'm a ne'er-do-well, this is like the greatest day on earth. This is the greatest day on earth. People are answering the door willy-nilly for no reason, just for some candy. But how do I know that they're not a ne'er-do-well? So I refuse to open my door for young toughs who just come. I mean, I don't know what they're up to. What if somebody's hiding behind the door? So I don't answer the door on Halloween. So maybe I'm a curmudgeon, whatever you want to say. But I just think it's an antiquated kind of tradition that we have here. Because, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, people weren't robbing you. But now, these days, can you trust somebody who's at your door? So, I don't answer the door. But if you listened to a few podcasts ago, I was talking about how decorating the house now for Halloween has become very popular. And so I'm looking around my neighborhood, and there's some really cool things. So I like to decorate. I mean, you go to my house at Christmas, it's a winter wonderland. Three trees, no waiting. I mean, the whole house, top to bottom, decked. I love Santa. There are millions of Santa. The whole house is red and white. Love Santa. Every kind of Santa you could think of, everywhere you look. I love decorating. Even do stuff on the outside, the whole spiel. You walk inside and it's, you know, our cat Grimsby looking around like, what the hell just happened here? Where am I living? When she first came into the house a couple years ago. So I love decorating. So now I'm looking around, I'm going, and I've gone to like some stores like Target and stuff, and they've got all these decorations, and they got the big webs and these giant spiders and the big skulls and the big, you know, inflatable jackal. Although I have never done the inflatable thing on my grass. I don't know if I can do that. I'm still not sold on that. But so I was thinking in my head, I'd like to do this. I like to decorate. I've always liked Halloween. As I said, 1973, I won first place in the Rusty Rooster Booster Club for my two-headed man costume, and I will be posting that on my Facebook page. I found the picture the other day of my two-headed man costume from 1973. So anyway, I'm wondering here, but here's my dilemma, and I always have a dilemma. Wouldn't be Elton John if I didn't have a dilemma. If I decorate my house, see, here's my yin and my yang. I love to decorate, so I'd like to decorate my house for Halloween. But I don't want to encourage trick-or-treaters. I'm still off that. So here's my question. If I decorate my house, am I then sending a signal to the world that I embrace Halloween and therefore encourage trick-or-treaters? Or...
Absolutely.
See, but this is my point. I say one has nothing to do with the other. I'm being Halloween and festive, and the people who know me once again on this radio station, every year I wear my festive pin, my wreath pin, which is not a brooch. It's a festive pin. So I'm very festive. I even have on my winter coat a little ghost that says boo on it. So I'm into Halloween.
But part of being festive is participating in the tradition of
I don't want to. See, so now this is where
you
I'm...
You can choose where you're festive.
So this is what I'm afraid of. If I go out and I buy the giant spider, or I buy the...
You're screwed.
If I buy the spider webs, or I buy the inflatable Dracula, or whatever I do, I hang a goalie mask from my front door, or even Or not even that. I mean, I think it's kind of, I just like the look of it. I mean, you can go to the horror extent, but I really like the look. I mean, I've seen several people with the nice big haystacks on their front porch with a few pumpkins, which looks autumnal, you know. But I'm afraid of that because I don't want to invite trick-or-treaters because I am not answering the door. And I just don't. I don't answer the door. So now I'm torn. I mean, it's too late now. I'm thinking of next year. I haven't bought anything. I haven't put anything on my... Because I need to think stuff out. I don't do things on a whim. I always have to look at the consequences. So I'm for next year, for 2017, I have to decide. I have a year now, exactly to the day, to decide whether I do decorate my house for Halloween and get into it from the decoration standpoint. But... Oh, there's the other question then. And that's Kristen back there producing the show and chiming in here. So here's my question. You say that if I decorate, then I am inviting...
Absolutely.
Okay, and then here's the other question. If I do that, and they do ring the doorbell, and I don't answer it...
Well, now you got to make sure that your porch light is off.
Believe me, my house looks like there's a tin. Every shade is down. I'm surprised there's oxygen in my house. Believe me, there is no on Halloween. There is not a trace that there's in anybody even living in my house. But my question is, do I open myself up for the trick if I don't give the treat? If I have my house decorated...
I think you're safe. I don't think people really do tricks anymore.
Oh, a couple years ago, somebody destroyed all my pumpkins. I hid some pumpkins out on my thing, and they were all destroyed.
For being half in. Well, you're half into the festivities.
All right, well, okay. Well, then, well, sadly then, you are then now taking away my creative bent and my ability to embrace portions. See, I don't. You're saying I have to be all in. I say it's Halloween's a la carte. I'll just take the decoration. I don't want the prefix
you know
dinner.
What? You do you. And it's like it's up to you if you want to.
Well, I just don't want to get eggs on my house because they won't.
That's the price that you might have to pay for not following through.
Because the egg yolks will not go with the big spider webs and the giant spider. That's all I'm saying. And welcome back here to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic at WGNplus.com. So, a couple weeks ago, I filled in for Dean Richards on his Sunday show. And I had an actress friend of mine on. Because, as we all know, at least in the Chicago area, big doings over the last several weeks. The opening of Hamilton.
Yay!
Did you see it?
I saw it.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you saw it. Because maybe you can help me out on this. So, I had this friend on because I'm a huge... I mean, I've been in more than 30 plays around the Chicago area. I've seen every... I go to New York once or twice a year to see plays. In fact, going... in a couple of weeks to see The Front Page with Nathan Lane on Broadway. So I love theater. I'm not a huge musical fan, but I've seen them all. At my wedding, I had a song from Phantom of the Opera, All I Ask of You.
Great song.
Yeah. In fact, I took my wife's garter off with my Phantom mask on.
Creepy.
Yes. I came out to... I had my fedora, my tuxedo from the wedding, and my Phantom mask. I did all the hand moves, but like I said, so I've seen Les Mis, and I've seen Miss Saigon, and I've seen them all. So this Hamilton thing has obviously become, you know, a phenomenon. And it's broken all the records on Broadway. I was surprised it didn't break the record for winning Tonys, though. That one was expected to go down, but it didn't. The Producers is still the biggest Tony award-winning play. But it won like 12 out of, you know, could have won 13. So anyway, it's a huge hit. It's it crosses all racial lines. It crosses all age lines. You name it. And Lin-Manuel Miranda has really done an amazing thing here. And so I was watching, but I haven't caught in the Hamilton bug. Okay, usually I will be right on top of this. But my aversion to it is, and I love history. I love American history. I've been to Washington, D.C. I've been to Boston and walked the Freedom Trail. I've been to Valley Forge. I've been to Gettysburg. I love history, American history. But and so this Hamilton thing is great because it's actually telling this story of a very important person in American history who, aside from being on the $10 bill, most people didn't even know about anymore.
I knew about him from the peanut butter commercial.
Which one? No.
I'm sorry. It was a milk commercial. And it was like a quiz show guy, like a radio disc jockey, like called this guy and was like, "Who shot Alexander Hamilton?" And he's in like a library.
Oh, how
and
funny.
Like the bullets right there. And the
right.
guy had just taken a bite of a peanut butter sandwich. And he's like, "M.O." And he could not say Amber.
Right.
I feel like
because of
I've talked to many people and they're like, that's the only way I knew who
I know.
Hamilton was.
I mean, and then you find out, I mean, aside from being, you know, just a key force, and he was, Washington's chief of staff or high up as well, and then he's the first, part of the U.S. Treasury. He's part of the Constitution. I mean, he's done some amazing things at a young age and wasn't even born here. Came here, so he is the ultimate immigrant story. So anyway, and the funny thing is, if you remember, about 2 or 3 years ago, when they were debating to put a woman on some of our currency, the $10 bill, Hamilton was a goner. He was off the 10. It wasn't a question of which bill. It was a question of which woman. But it wasn't a question of the bill. It was the sawbuck is gone. You know, who's Alexander Hamilton anyway? Everybody else, we know Benjamin Franklin, and all the other guys are all presidents. This guy wasn't even a president, and whatever. And then this play, I believe that this play helped him stay.
Yeah, for sure.
On the $10 bill.
Everyone has Hamilton.
Hamilton. Like I said, you walk down the street here in Chicago, everybody's wearing a powdered wig. Hamilton fever. I haven't caught it. So the one main reason is because I'm not a huge fan of rap music. And so that was my first aversion. Even though I love the topic, and I think I would be interested in seeing it, I'm not a fan of rap music. And so I don't know if I could sit and watch and enjoy this show, this musical, which I know and I've been told, and you've seen it, it's not all rap.
I was just going to say, it's not all rap.
I understand. It's not all. Yeah, there's some big Broadway kind of, But still, it is very rap based. You have to give me that.
Did you see In the Heights?
No, which he wrote.
Okay.
Also.
Never mind then.
No, and was that rap based too?
Yeah, it's similar cadence of his.
Yeah.
Style.
So yeah. So I've been. This is very difficult for me because this I should be way into this. So I had this friend of mine on, and she's been in many musicals. She's a theater junkie, very good actress. I was in a couple of plays with her, and she's played in some of the classic roles like Gypsy and things like that. So I saw on her Facebook page that she's got tickets to go in March. I mean, this is 5 months ahead. She can't wait. So I had her on, and as a lark, it's kind of a little bit in between the interview with her because I was trying to see if she could, change my view. Can she, convince me to go see this? And in the midst of it, I said, I'm actually putting, after I've heard about all this, I've come up with my own historical musical called BFF, Benjamin Freakin' Franklin. So I'm tapping into the BFF thing for the young kids. And I'm
Benjamin
playing.
Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, well, so as a joke, I said, Benjamin Franklin has, he's, first of all, much more known than Alexander Hamilton.
Dime stores on every corner.
Yeah, and, this guy was truly a Renaissance man. This guy had his hands in everything, and I mean that. Because apparently, you see pictures of Ben Franklin, not the best looking guy, but apparently did pretty, pretty good with the ladies for some reason. He was quite, and on all shores too. He was a diplomat to France, and apparently, my gosh, who knows what diseases this guy had, especially at that time. But so you look back at his accomplishments. He did everything. So I'm like, wow, a lot of fodder here. So I was joking around. I said, there's this play called Stomp, which is about tap dancing.
Right.
Well, Benjamin Franklin was our first Postmaster General. So I said, I've got a song in my BFF musical called Stamp, where tap dancers, the whole stage is filled with giant envelopes, and everybody is tap dancing on the stamps.
There you go.
In order for the letters to be done. And then there's another song, you know, he created the bifocal, the glasses, bifocals, Benjamin Franklin. What's my song? Spectacular Specs. And then the love song is...
writing it down.
Yeah, well, wait. And then I've thought about another, if not Spectacular Specs, which could be a great, you know, Bob Fosse, you know, dance number with jazz hands and everything. But then if you want to get a little introspective and a little quiet, I thought of another song when he discovered it's like another, it's my second pair of eyes. That's not a bad title either.
No, that's not.
Isn't it? My second pair of eyes. When I put them on, and what a surprise, I saw the world with a new pair of eyes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. So I'm like,
all
wait a
minute. All copyrighted, by the way. All copyrighted.
That's right. Then my big, if not Spectacular Specs, my big dance number is called Benji's. The stage is filled with $100 dancing bills. All kicking like the Rockefeller Center, like the dancers. Could you imagine a stage full of $100 bills all kicking in time?
I smell a hit.
And then the showstopper, if you've seen Miss Saigon, the big deal about Miss Saigon is they land a helicopter on the stage. And if you've seen Phantom, I mean, you know, the chandelier comes down. What's my showstopper? A giant kite.
Oh, my gosh.
A giant kite
with
comes.
With a key on it, right?
Yes, with lightning. And his wife's, and it's the female lead's biggest song, Go Fly a Kite. I know you have to prove you're right, so go fly a kite. And here comes the kite.
I'm really impressed with this.
So the funny thing is, I came up with this on a lark, right? Well, then, 2 weeks ago on PBS on Channel 11, there was a show about
Hamilton
and how he did it.
Last night, I just watched.
Was it on again?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it was very interesting.
And they
documented
it.
It
took him like 2 years to write two songs.
And he basically was he was on vacation, and he was reading this Hamilton biography, and he came up with this song, and he told his friend, I think I've got something, I may have a song, but I don't know if this is goofy, it's a goofy idea. And you know, 2.5-3 years later, the guy is now a megastar. So I'm watching this. I said, you know, this is really not that stupid. And then I actually started, like I said, I started to write lyrics. Like I said, here. hey, Benjamin, it's dark outside. This is nothing but your silly pride. So go fly a kite.
But I do feel like you need some of the rap music in there.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
no.
Benji's song.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Song.
Well, like I said, I think the first one, let's see. Oh, yeah. Can't buy nothing with a buck. What use is a fin? Well, no, that's not the one that had. I had one
hey
where.
There, I was going to say.
You know, that one's not very good.
On the rhyming, that will be.
If you want, let's see. I can't remember my. If you want to send a package, if you want to send a letter, the only way it gets there is with a stamp. But my point is, BFF, Benjamin Freakin' Franklin, is not that bad of an idea.
No.
I mean, these songs, because this guy, there's a wealth of knowledge here. I mean, a wealth of material here in his life. What else did I have? Other songs. Frankly, the song Frankly, where he talks about his adultery. That could be a dramatic part. And it's Frankly, not Franklin. Frankly, I'm ashamed. Frankly, I still love you. Frankly, that's a hit. Poor Richard's Almanac. He wrote Poor Richard's Almanac. So my song is Poor Richard Will Make Me Rich. And that's another big showstopper.
I'm telling you, seriously.
Right?
So, you gotta know somebody.
I know. I need some financial backing here. Spectacular Specs. Benji's. Go Fly a Kite. Oh, You know, he co-wrote the Declaration of Independence, right? His song, major one, I Declare.
I'm really picturing this on
stage. I know! Like, this would not be a bad idea.
In the middle of the stage, being like, and I
declare. I declare. I mean, that's what I'm saying. And it plays off the declare. I mean, I'm sorry. I've seen enough musicals. I know what I'm talking about here. And that kite thing, I'm sorry, but that kite thing could be very cool. I mean, that would be very cool. I've seen Miss Saigon, as I said, when I was in London one time, I went to see the musical. It's never come to the United States. I don't understand. One of my favorite movies growing up was a movie called Chitty Chitty Bang Bang about this car. It's a Disney movie with Dick Van Dyke. I had a little...
Angela Lansbury, too, right?
Is she in that one?
I think she was in that one.
I don't know. But and Ian Fleming wrote it from James Bond, so figure that out. But in the play... They do have Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the car flying over the audience. So you tell me that Benjamin Franklin with a kite and a key.
Benjamin freaking Franklin.
BFF. BFF. I mean, I could totally see the t-shirts right now. BFF. It's trending with the young people. BFF. I'm sorry. But if you're interested, get in touch with me. Because I think I've got something here. And I saw the way this guy was writing. He wrote this. He was sitting there with his little laptop just going, boop. And all of a sudden, he's got the story. I've got all the material here. I just need some backing. You want to be my BFF? Then invest in my BFF. And welcome back here to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic at WGNplus.com. Thank you so much for clicking on. Hope you're going to stay the route here. I'm doing this for an hour. I don't know what you're doing. I know this is the age of everybody listens when they want and they listen. Hey, I'm here for an hour. I'm not doing this in like 15-minute segments and I leave and I come back 3 days later. I do this in an hour. The least you could do is carve an hour out of your busy life and listen to the whole thing at one time. But if not, whatever. So, this week, or now, I'm recording this a few days afterwards. So, last week, Cubs start World Series. Now, we all hoped when the season started that maybe this was a possibility. But if you've been in Chicago, you've been a Cub fan as long as I have... The real chances of the Cubs going to a World Series still sounded crazy. Even though they started out the season great and they had an amazing season, they basically were in first place from April until the end of the year. They went wire to wire. I think there was one or two days when they weren't in first place. But so in May, when the season is just starting and the Cubs are doing well, but once again, who's to think they're going to actually go to the World Series? It hasn't happened in 108 years, so I think the odds were on my side. So Elton John is appearing in Las Vegas. And I have to go see my 165th Elton John concert. So he's there in October. So I buy a ticket for October 26th. Now this is in May. Don't even think about it, right? I mean, it's October. This is 5-6 months ago. I mean, who even thinks about it? All of a sudden, he's... Damn, Cubs are doing pretty good. They win 103 games. They beat the Giants, and then they beat the Dodgers. And so now I'm looking ahead, and I'm going, wait a minute. You know, I'm going to Vegas next week. What's the World Series schedule? Son of a bee, if Game 2 isn't on October 26th. And, of course, the Cubs lose Game 1. So now that game is huge. Because if they lose that game, and they're down 2-0, yes, I understand. There's still 5 games left. But to come back is, so I'm like, oh. But I have to go. A, I want to go. I haven't seen Elton since April. I've had withdrawal symptoms. I haven't seen the guy since April. I mean, what am I supposed to do? That's why I'm called Elton Jim, right? So, but I've got the hair. I mean, I've got the room. I've got the air. I mean, I have to go. I've got the airfare, everything. I've got to go. But I'm bummed because I'm going to miss this game because this is the Cubs in the World Series. And if you go on my Facebook page, you will see that this has really inspired me. I've actually, I found when I was like 7 or 8 years old, I found these pictures. We went on a family vacation to Hawaii. And I remember, and I found the pictures, I had a Cubs belt buckle with my white belt back in 1973. And I still have the belt buckle. It's in my kitchen now. I found it. But I'm like, I have to find the picture. I found a picture up on my Facebook page. You will see a picture of me with my parents out on our balcony, you know, at the hotel in Hawaii. And I've got my Cubs belt because that was my big fashion statement in 1973 as a 7 or 8 year old. My Cub belt buckle. And here I still have that belt buckle 40-some years later. And I also found some tickets, which I've had. I didn't even realize. I have tickets to games 3, 4, and 5 of the World Series. How awesome is that? Only problem is they're for the 1998 World Series, which never happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There was a lottery back then, and I got in the lottery and I won the right to buy tickets. So you spent your money, you bought the tickets in advance. They sent you the physical tickets. They didn't have the team. It just said American League team. But I have the sheet of tickets. Still have them. And I had games 3, 4, and 5, which are the exact three games that are here in Chicago. It's just that they're 18 years too late. So I'm going to be watching. And they were sweet seats. They were like section 116, like row 2. They were really good seats. So I guess I'm watching at home just like everyone else. But anyway, so I'm a huge Cub fan. So I'm bummed. But then I think, well, wait a minute. Vegas is 2 hour difference. So Elton concert starts at 7:30 Vegas time. Cub game, 7 o'clock Central time, which means the game will start at 5 in Vegas, live. We'll be able to watch the whole thing, but we'll be able to watch some of it, but I will miss the end. Then, the fates are looking down on this lifelong Cub fan who played in Wrigley Field when he was 10. Yes, he's a member of the Kilbourne Park All-Stars. We beat Gage Park, 8-1, North Side. Awesome. Still have my picture. Still have the ball that Mayor Daly threw to me, the original Mayor Daly. Because I was the catcher throughout the first pitch. Still have that ball and the picture. So huge Cub fan. Lived off of Addison. Used to take the bus down to Cub games all the time. About, what, 4 or 5 miles? There's a sign at the L at Addison that says, like, Wrigley Field, 5, 6 miles. So I was about 2 miles from there. Just off of Pulaski is where the L line is. So I was probably about 6 miles away. Anyway, huge Cub fan. All of a sudden, during game one, they announce that tomorrow's game on the 26th will be pushed ahead an hour because there's some rain, which we had here, was moving toward Cleveland. So to make sure they get the game in, they were going to move the game up an hour, which was a good sign because if you saw the game that Wednesday, later on that night, it was pouring out in Cleveland. That game would have been rained out. I'm like, wait a minute. If they move the game up an hour, that means in Vegas, the game starts at 4. Concert starts at 7:30. I got to leave my hotel room about 7:15 to get to the concert. But 3 hours and 15 minutes, that's how long a baseball game is. So the gods are shining on me. I'm going to be able to watch the Cubs and then go see Elton. What a doubleheader. This is the ultimate doubleheader. There's nothing bad here in this scenario. Except Wednesday when I go, it's pouring rain. Get to O'Hare. Flight's delayed. I got to get to that room at 4 o'clock. I'm supposed to get in at 2:30. Flight's delayed 45 minutes. We land at about 10 after 3. So now I get off the plane. I'm running. I take an airport shuttle. It's usually always there. You got to stop at a few. You know, it's cheaper because the traffic in Vegas is terrible. If you're going to go on the meter with a cab or something, you could be there. 5 minute ride could be 20 bucks. So I take the airport shuttle. You have to stop at a bunch of hotels, but at least it's cheaper. So, okay, fine. So now I'm waiting for the shuttle and it's not there. It's usually right there within 5-10 minutes. So now it's 3:45. And there's no shuttle. And I'm like, come on, let's go. So now the shuttle shows up. And but now we've been waiting for 20 minutes, so now a huge amount of people have gathered. So now, what hotel are you at? Venetian. Which one are you at? Mirage. Which one are you at? Flamingo. Which one are you at? Caesars. Oh, Jesus. I mean, it's not like one stop. It's going to be 15 stops. And even the bus driver jokes and says, oh, we got a lot of people at a lot of different hotels. Great. Because it's 10 minutes to 4. And usually when I go, at every hotel in Vegas when you check in, there's always a line. Because there's always a million people there. So I'm like, I mean, I'm not going to miss the game, but certainly I want to see the beginning of the game. I mean, you know, you want to get into it. So now it's 10 minutes to 4. And the airport's not far from the Strip. And it's a Wednesday, so it's not going to be like weekend traffic. So the guy goes, okay, first stop is Harrah's. Now I'm staying at the Flamingo, which is across the street from Caesar's Palace where Elton's playing. So I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Harrah's is right next to Flamingo. He might stop at the Flamingo next instead of me having to go through this whole rigmarole. I know my Vegas. Next stop, Flamingo. Yes. He stops. I run in. I'm running to the front to the desk. I look. Usually there's a line. I mean, they even have the ropes there, you know, squiggly ropes, because the line is always long. It's 5 minutes to 4. There's no line to check in. There's no line. I mean, zero line. I run in. I get right there. I'm just waiting. I have to just wait for one of the people to check me in. But I'm next. Within 2 minutes, and I'm not exaggerating, 15 people behind me. I mean, I would have been stuck in this line, but I'm there. Boom. I get in. I'm only staying a day. I'm literally leaving the next morning at 7 a.m. So it's, okay, here's your card. Boom, boom. I go to my thing. I get into the elevator. I go up. I find the room. I don't know. I know it's on Fox. It's going to be on the local Fox station. I don't know what station it is. So now I'm going through the TV. Boom, boom, boom. Station, station. I click on the game. It's about 4:13. The pitch is supposed to be like at 4:10. I turn on the TV. I find the Cub game. The game turns on, and I'm not exaggerating. The game turns on. I have no idea what's happening because the game just started. All I know is I see Anthony Rizzo up to bat. I have no idea how many outs, who's on base. The pitch comes. He hits it. Hits a double. All of a sudden, I see Bryant scoring. I'm like, oh, my God, perfect timing. I mean, I didn't see anything else. Well, as soon as I get the team out, Rizzo drives in the first run. I'm like, my God, 4 hours ago, I'm in Chicago in the pouring rain, and now I'm in Vegas. I turn on my TV. The odds were against me with the delayed flight, with the crowded airplane shuttle, with the possible line at the hotel. It does pay to be a Cub fan. I saw the whole game up to about the sixth inning, but by then the Cubs scored their 5 runs, and Cleveland even scored theirs on that cheap wild pitch. And the final was 5-1. So I saw all the scoring. I saw the first run batted in. I went to the concert, had a great time, even brought my Cub hat. And there's a point in the Elton show in Vegas, if you're in the first couple rows, during Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, they let the audience go up on stage, and you literally stand around the piano. So I'm like a foot away from Elton. I pull out, he's a big baseball fan. He's been living in Atlanta for 20 years, and back in the 90s, Atlanta was one of the better teams. So he's a huge baseball fan, a big Braves fan. So I pull out I brought a Cub hat with me, showed it to him. He kind of laughed, and so I put it on the piano. So I've got a cool picture of, I left the Cub hat on the piano for the whole song, so even the audience could see it. But I have a real cool picture of the Cub hat in the foreground and Elton playing the piano. So go on my Facebook page, Jim Toronto. It's a really cool picture. And he was even wearing blue glasses, so he matches with the Cub hat. So once again, great concert, great game. If you had to say that day, there's sometimes where you go, what would you rather be? Some days you go, what would you rather be doing? Oh, I'd love to be here, let me be there. I have to say, October 26th, 2016, I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. And welcome back to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. My goodness. Show's been on for 20 minutes. I feel like I've run a marathon. If you've hopefully been listening to the beginning, I mean, I've already told three major stories. Talking about whether I should decorate for my house for Halloween and if it will entice trick-or-treaters, which I do not want to happen. My possibly Tony Award-winning, dominating musical, BFF, Benjamin Freakin' Franklin, which even Kristen, the producer here, believes can be a hit. Sadly, I don't think she has $4 million in the bank.
Sorry.
To invest. So
No.
Your enthusiasm is appreciated, but I need some Benjamins. Literally. And lastly, my divine intervention of seeing the Cubs and Elton all within a 3-hour period, how it all worked out. So now we get ourselves to some more interesting and fun stuff. A good old visit to a part of the show that we like to do on a pretty regular basis here called the Pop Culture Club. So please hit the pop culture theme. Now, if you've listened, you know at Pop Culture Club we talk about the burning issues of the pop culture world, and I try to bring in some experts. I consider myself a pop culture expert, but I'm not above sharing my opinions with other experts. And one member of our pop culture club is Kristen Decker, who will be joining me for this episode.
Expert. I love the sound of that.
Yeah, expert, guru, whatever you want to call it. Scholar, junkie. And the one reason why I wanted to talk to Kristen about this is because they're really, I'm looking around the newspaper and you know, I mean, there's never a, there's never a shortage of pop culture stories, but given where we're at right now, it's October 31st when this posts. So next week we will know who the next president of the United States is. And I have to say that since in the last year and a half or so, regardless of Brad and Angelina and all female Ghostbusters and James Corden car karaoke and whatever else has been happening in the pop culture world, the biggest pop culture story, I believe, in the last year and a half is coming to an end on November 8th. And that has been our presidential election. Not only is it an important thing for our country, but in terms of the pop culture world, our two candidates are pretty much pop culture creations. Donald Trump certainly is a pop culture.
Far,
yeah. And Hillary Clinton has been in the our country's front window for more than 20 some years. First lady, senator, secretary of state, a lightning rod for controversy, has a huge amount of followers and a very large and vocal group of detractors. So this is, and as we've seen, this election has been far from normal. And Donald Trump certainly has changed the way elections are run. Now, that may be good or bad. We'll see if there becomes a new blueprint. Although I don't think Trump really has a blueprint, but Trump has certainly used social media like no other candidate has, especially Twitter, which is probably to his detriment.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, it will be interesting to see how campaigns are run, because whether Trump wins or not, the fact is that he did win the Republican nomination using this strategy. So it will be, and he beat 16 other Republican Republican candidates who were all established, who all had track records, who all were either governors or senators or congressmen. So, you know, you could say what you will, but he did make a dent. So I thought we should really talk about this. I love politics. I'm a huge political scholar, junkie, guru, whatever you want to call it. I watch on Sunday, all I watch are the political shows in the morning. I watch CNN and I watch MSNBC and I watch them all to get a full grasp of the whole picture of what everyone is saying. And so I did want to talk to Kristen today, because what I find interesting about this campaign is the historic angle of it, and perhaps the lack of the historic angle. And obviously, if Hillary Clinton is elected first woman president, that's big stuff.
That's huge. Yeah.
Well, not only is, and think about it, not only is that huge in its own isolated world, but think about in the last 10 years, we will have elected the first African-American president mm-hmm. and the first woman president in succession.
Right.
That's huge. That, I mean, the first woman president is huge, but to think that we have broken down two major barriers
right.
within a decade is amazing, when our country is 240 years old, and within 10 years, we will have made history twice.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But here's my question. And I will talk. I don't want to get into politics, because that's not my point. This is a pop culture-ish thing. But I will give my prediction about what I think is going to happen anyway. But from a pop culture standpoint, I think this is important. We are certainly right now, and have been in the last 4 or 5 years, but certainly now, it's very pronounced. We are in a very strong female empowerment movement in our culture.
I completely agree.
Without a doubt. I mean, they had an all-female Ghostbusters. If that doesn't prove it, then what does? Right? But clearly, I mean, there is no doubt. In fact, I had to laugh to some extent. Entertainment Weekly came out a couple of issues ago with their 50 top superheroes of all time. Superheroes. Who was number one?
Oh, I have...
Wonder Woman.
I was going to say Superwoman, but...
Yeah, Wonder Woman. So Wonder Woman, I mean, there's Superman, there's Batman. You know, those are the two. But wow, Wonder Woman. But we're in an era of female empowerment, so not surprised. I think they're making a comment with that more than anything else. But so there's no doubt about that. So here's the interesting thing. We are on the brink of having the first female president. And we are far behind in terms of the world. I mean, right now, you've got Angela Merkel in Germany.
Yeah.
And now you've got a female prime minister in England. So think about this. If Hillary wins, the three biggest democracies in the world will be run by women. That's pretty amazing.
That's shattering the glass ceiling.
Yeah, there's no more glass. I don't want to hear that there's no more glass ceiling. Let the sun in.
Exactly.
The sun is in.
Exactly.
Put on some 500 sunscreen, because the sun's coming in. There's no more shadows. But here's the thing. Interestingly enough, and I'm not going to, but you're a young woman. You fall into this category. There is not an overwhelming, enthusiastic support, at least from what I'm hearing and reading and feeling, from younger women about the enormity of this. So I'm wondering, in your mind, and a lot of it, you know, that Bernie Sanders, you know, was very popular in the Democratic primaries, and he most of his followers were in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
And there is a question whether the Bernie people really will come out and vote for Hillary. And so while older women in their 50s and 60s and older, you know, if Hillary wins, this is the culmination of the women's lib movement that
right.
started in the 60s and 70s. And they were there for the struggle. And they were there when you know, the workplace was very hostile to women, and it wasn't open to women, and there was no such thing as, you know, the term, you know. There was a time when no one even thought of a woman doctor.
And that is just crazy to me. I think,
right.
Yeah,
And this is my point. Because in your experience...
In my experience, someone in their early 30s, like, I just never experienced any of that.
Right.
Me personally, or ever really even saw it. Like,
right.
I had a female doctor,
right.
you know. So there wasn't... I can see where there the excitement might be a little lost on the younger generation. But I still think, I mean, they recognize how historic it would be to have the first female president.
But here's the thing. Here's the question. Do you feel that in your life, let's say Hillary loses, right? You still feel within your lifetime.
Oh, that I'll see a female president?
Right.
Yeah.
Or even in the next 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, there's just not even a question.
Right, exactly. So that so that's what I'm wondering is that while this could be historic, there's no doubt. I mean, it's amazing that I mean, they're talking about landslides here. Who knows? I still believe it's going to be a closer election than people are predicting. She needs the woman vote.
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, you would think that she's got it. But there's there is this nagging thing. Are young women in their 20s and 30s, are they looking, are they going to want to say, and I ask you, do you want your first woman president to be a 70-year-old grandmother or a 45 or 50-year-old woman of your generation? So yeah. Do you want that first president to be like you as opposed to be some 70-year-old grandma?
I don't look at Hillary Clinton at all as a 70-year-old grandma. So to me that doesn't even factor in. So to me, having someone with that experience and with her skill set and just her history in politics, that's more important than maybe a freshman off the street. I mean, I know the likelihood of that, but you know, like a Donald Trump-esque type with right. no political experience
right.
woman.
So in other words, you do appreciate the history, aside from her credentials as compared to Trump in terms of first lady, senator.
That's important.
Secretary of State.
Important.
But take those off the table. You still see the significance of the first woman president.
Yes.
If she doesn't win this time, no big deal, because 5 or 10 years down the line, there may be another woman president, or another candidate who's a little younger and a little hipper and thinks like me and looks a little bit like me. And so I'll have my woman president in my lifetime.
I think now is the time.
Okay.
I think now is the time to completely get rid of that even being a topic.
Right. Well, and that's interesting because it'll be interesting to see on Election Day, because you are hearing about, like I said, this big contingent of possible former Bernie Sanders voters or younger women who may vote, to your point, for that reason, but because women of your generation and your age are much more free-thinking and much more independent, mm-hmm. they may stay home. Or they may vote for a third-party candidate as in protest because Bernie didn't...
I don't see anybody staying home. I do see them getting out and voting. But I do feel like that there are, you know, a lot of people out there that they don't care at all.
So now, in your
I could see them voting third party.
So now, in your circle of friends, mm-hmm. and not male friends, in just your circle right. of female friends, where do you feel people are coming down?
Where with her?
With Hillary.
Yeah.
With so her. There's no Bernie thing. There's no third party. You really there's a very hardcore contingency.
Hardcore, yeah.
And is it because she is qualified? Because she's a woman, or is it a combination of the two?
Definitely qualified, and you know, so much more than the other option.
Yeah,
options.
The other option. Yeah, I mean, this year, I mean, everybody also they talk about write-ins, the third-party candidates this time, and there's no Ross Perot here. I mean, this Gary Johnson guy literally didn't know some key stuff. You know what I mean? So I don't know if he's a viable candidate. He could be a reactionary vote, but I don't think that there's any chance that he's going to really make a swing here one way or the other. So now here's my prediction. And see, I want to get your take on this. So here's my prediction. I think this is either going to be one of the biggest landslides in presidential history where, I mean... By 9 o'clock at night, if the polls close here at 7, and I know that a lot of times they wait for the West Coast to vote, there's 2-hour difference. So they hold off about calling the election. So it's not, the people there get a chance to vote and get their voice heard. But at the same time, with technology and with this on-the-go society we live in, I mean, they can pretty much, they might not officially call it, but they certainly will see a trend happening. And especially if it's a landslide. So I would think by 7 or 8 o'clock, by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, there could be easily say, this is over. It's done. At least our projections show. Or option two. It's either going to be, I don't think there's any in between here. I don't think this is going to be, this is either going to be a 70 to 30% or an 80 to 20% Hillary landslide. Or this is going to be a 49 to 48. We're up till 3 in the morning. And Trump wins by 2 or 3 electoral votes. I don't think there's anything in the middle. It's not going to be 60-40. It's going to either be Trump is so rejected, summarily rejected by everyone, that it's a landslide. Or there's a lot of closet people, and this is where I say this may not be over. There are a lot of closet people, I believe, right now, in the pop culture world, because of all the stuff we've heard over the last, especially a couple of weeks with all the groping and all this possible sexual predator stuff with Trump and the Billy Bush. Who would have thought that Billy Bush would wind up being a major part of our presidential campaign? Although, once again, he's a Bush. He is related to that family. But anyway, I think that right now, if somebody calls you up, or sees you on the street as an official pollster, and they say, who are you going to vote for? I think that if you are a Trump supporter, in that moment of either looking the person in the eye who's asking you that question, or even on the phone, you would be embarrassed to say Trump, because you'd be viewed as, what are you, an idiot? What are you? You've heard what he's done. He's unfit. And so they may be lying for that moment of embarrassment. And if you and the only reason I say this is because several months ago, I was watching the shows, and they said, while there has been a very strong surge in the Brexit vote in the UK, all polls show that at the end of the day, England, the UK, will stay in the European Union. And as we saw, they voted to exit. And every poll out there said they're staying. So clearly people were lying. Or people got in that booth and decided to change. And so I'm wondering if that happens. I don't have a horse in this race. But here's, at least at this point, but here's what I'm going to make my bigger overall prediction. So see if you understand this one. Whoever wins, whether it's Hillary or whether it's Trump, to be honest with you, I think they are a one-term president. I don't believe they are going. There's going to be such a divided country. You think we have gridlock now? You wait until what has been lost on all this is people forget, and I think even Republicans forget how much they hate Hillary Clinton. And if she becomes president, and the Congress and especially the Senate is still Republican run. If you think there's gridlock now, they hate the Clintons. They hate them. And if Trump wins, there's going to be an enormous left-wing surge about how unfit this guy is, and this is crazy. I don't know how anybody who wins this election really is going to be able to govern, which is unfortunate and sad. Because I voted for Hillary in 2008. I didn't vote for Obama. I voted for Hillary. I was a Hillary guy. And ironically, by her becoming the Secretary of State with Obama, those 4 years is what really gave her all this baggage. Because the emails and Benghazi was all to do with that Secretary of State's job. She shouldn't have taken that job in retrospect. She would have had her senator and her first lady thing. That job really created a lot of the untrustworthiness in her and this baggage that she has. But I just have to tell you, I think that whoever wins... it's going to be an interesting 4 years because there's going to be there's not going to be a mandate, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on both sides. And the sad part is, we need leadership. Our world is in a real, real tumultuous state. We need some stability, and sadly, I don't think we're going to get it. And what's really angered me, even though, as I said, I don't really want Trump to win, but what's bothered me is people have said, well, he's unfit and he's unhinged and all this stuff. He did win the primary. He was not anointed. So 15 million people did vote for him. So those 15 million people are not going to turn around suddenly and love Hillary. And he's going to get 40 or 50 million votes. So I just say, we'll see what happens. This is one of the greatest pop culture stories, political stories on earth. I don't know who's going to win, but I can tell you, I think in 2020, we're going to have a different president. Whoever wins, one term and out. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. You've been listening to Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Hope you will tune in every Monday for a new episode of Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screens.